have a quote here as we're jumping into the family section of our relationship series. It's a quote from Dr. Michael Siegel, and he's one of my favorite professors out at Dallas Theological. I love this guy. He's taught me so much, and he said this once, and it stuck with me, and or I read it, I guess, and it's a genius. I think you need to hear this, is that parenting is not a sprint, and it's not a marathon. It's a dog sled trek across Antarctica in winter. And you're the dog. And I felt that, and I thought that was true for me, it's true for you. So I thought about just wrapping up there. That's really all you need to know about family life, is you're the dog. Here's the deal. As we move into the parenting family, really is what it's side, and it includes parenting, we all want to know more. That's something that I found pretty concise throughout all counseling, all the books, the lectures, the conferences, the sermons. People want to know more about this, and there's a couple reasons for that. One is, when we talk about it, when we talk about family life, the first things that come to our mind are generally our failures. They're generally regrets. They're generally things that we wish we could have done better, that we wish we could have, man, if I had a redo. The other side is that we know how important it is. We just, in our bones, we just know family is important. And I think even if you want to initially disagree with this, I'll convince you, the number one influence in your life has been family. And whether that's by their presence or by their absence, you're designed to begin life in a family. That's how you've been made. And so you look for those things, and when you don't find them, you react a certain way. When you find them in their poor influences, you react a certain way. When you find them in their good influences, you react a different way. We all have been massively impacted by our families. And the other side of this, not just that we've been impacted, but that we've impacted our families as well. Who you are matters in your own family. And so your family might look all sorts of ways. There's a million different ways you could organize a family, and it continues to grow out, right? So there's you, and maybe you have siblings and your parents, and maybe you have step, maybe you have additional, maybe you have adopted, maybe you have, and then there's grandparents, and there's aunts and uncles. These things, this influence grows out and out, and you begin to realize that there's a lot of people that have influenced you, good or bad. Now, this is kind of all in the background, that there's all these people that's very important that I don't really know how to do it. All of that sort of plays into how you interact with your family. And when we open up the discussion, it's kind of obvious why we'd want to know more about it. Because no matter where you came from, you learned based on where you came from. And some for better, some for worse, that's what you started with. And then whoever you begin a family with also has that. For better or worse. Together, you get together and you realize, man, there's still gaps in our knowledge. We don't know how to do this. So it's massively important. It's from all sorts of different influences. We're starting the game a little bit behind, just like everybody else. And so when we say, let's talk about family, a lot of times it's going, yeah, because I have pain and I have confusion, I have a lack of success, and I'm wondering if that pain and confusion and lack of success comes from us trying to build families around something they're not designed to be built around. Right? I'm wondering if the way we build families, if we were to stick to God's design, if it would cure a lot of that. So that's where we're going to start. How does this family thing work? How is it designed? And we're going to be doing that by working through Deuteronomy 6, 1 through 9. We'll take a brief look at how God express to his people, hey, you're going to start over here. This is how I want families to look. Hopefully leaving this morning, you have four action steps, clear things that you're going to be able to apply. And I would give a disclaimer here. I'm not sure where you're at, right? We have single people. We have married people. We have kids with kids. How does that work? Some of y'all are kids with kids. But we have people with kids. We have people without kids. We have people who want kids. We have people who are divorced. We have grandparents. We have grandparents who live far away. We have everything in this room, right? All sorts of different desires and circumstances. So here's what I want you to do, and I want you to hold your breath on this, all right? This will work. What we're going to discuss here works in all of those scenarios. It's going to apply a little differently, and the way you approach it will be a little different depending on where you're coming from, but these truths are still true, right? That's how truth works. So as we apply these, I don't want you to be shut off because like, oh, this is just for people with little kids. Oh, this is just for people with teenagers. Oh, this is doesn't apply. No, there's a role for every one of us to play in this. So keep that in mind. As you get to Deuteronomy 6, I do want to start off with just a brief catch-up, right? Where are we in the Bible? See, God created the world, and we broke it. We brought sin into it. And God said, I'm going to fix this. I have a plan for this. And the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to start with one, and I'm going to multiply out. And I'm going to give these people responsibilities. You go represent me to the world. That's what happened. He said to Abraham, or he said to Adam, go represent me to the garden, right? Take care of this for me on my behalf. And the goal there was to continue to grow that garden until the world was perfect. But we messed that up. So going down the line, we get to Abraham. And God says, look, out of you, I'm going to kind of take this to the next stage. Right, we're following people, and he says, now we're going to go to a nation. Go from one guy to a family to a tribe to this nation. And now this nation can represent me to all the other nations. And there can be this bright spot of people following me, living my way. And through that, they're going to be able to share with the world what it's like to know Yahweh and call everyone to him. That's the plan. And so these people, he pulls them out of slavery in Egypt. He brings them to the edge of that promised land where they can begin to build this. And right on the edge there, they go, no thanks. We would, but following you seems kind of scary right now. So we're gonna run away. And God says, okay, I'll use the next generation. Which we don't have time, but there's a lesson there. As that generation goes out into the desert, they wander around for 40 years. And they watch God provide miraculously. And they have kids, right? So now there's this second generation who know only the God who leads them around the wilderness, who shows up as a fire, a pillar of fire at night to keep them warm and protect them, who shows up as this smoke pillar, this cloud that gives them shade to protect them and leads them through the desert. They see the miracles. They see God protect them from all these things. That's their background. They wake up every morning and there's food on the ground. That's how they live. And they finally come to the point where God says, all right, this next generation, you should come into this land now. Now, what should have been happening during those 40 years is there should have been a lot of parents saying, don't do it the way we did it. We blew it. Here's how you need to live. Here's what's important. Here's what you're going to look forward to in that next land. What we find out in Deuteronomy is that's not what happened. They drop the ball. When they get to this edge of the land and he's going to bring them in again, he has to give them the law again. They don't know it. He has to catch them all up. And you realize, man, this next generation wasn't ready. And so here, he's going to give them the pep talk that they need because their parents didn't do a good job. Their parents dropped the ball. Blame them if you want. Doesn't really matter. This is where we are now. They need to know what the plan is moving forward. And so Deuteronomy 6, verse 1, this is Moses speaking to them, and this is what he says. These are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you, to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess. Hey, this is how God wants you to live when you get across this river. You're going to get across there, and it's going to be game on. This is going to be the new place we do this. So that, now, that's an important thing. So that, the reason for this, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you. And so you may enjoy long life. Hear, Israel, and be careful to obey so that it may go well with you and that you may increase greatly in a land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, and when you walk along the road, and when you lie down, and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. write them on the door frames of your houses and of your gates. This series was built intentionally, right? Relationshipology, this concept of we start with friends and we move to marriage and we go to family. It flows. It's a natural progression. It's not just we came up with that, right? It's also in Scripture. It's in creation, right? From God, he created Adam. And out of Adam, he created Eve. And out of Eve, there came a baby, and so on and so forth. And there's this design that happens as the family progresses. There's this design that's lived out. This is why, actually, people who reject God can still have happy marriages, good friendships, and systems of family that make sense. They can still accomplish that. Now, they won't get all out of it that they should, because they're going to be missing the God piece. But if you live according to his design, there's success there because it's designed to work. So we can look in these other areas of people's lives and be like, "How they're not a Christian. How come they do that with their, how come that works for them?" Well, the common grace of God is that he's good and what he creates is good. And so when we live in it the way it should be lived in, it's good. It's designed to do so. Now, it does a couple things, family, when you think about it. One of them is this development of individuals. Right? Individually, I have been influenced by things, and that's helped me be who I am, or hurt me and made me who I am. We know this is true. Even within a family, just in big generalities, you have a child who looks to their father, and when the father doesn't communicate to them about identity and about value, that matters. Right? And so they maybe communicated something different. Maybe they didn't communicate anything at all. Maybe they communicated good. But either way, that has an effect. Generally speaking, those who look to their mother to find out what does it mean to be nurtured, what does it mean to be compassionate and have intimate connection. And if there's a problem there and they look to their mother and that isn't fulfilled, if that isn't communicated well, or if something wrong is communicated, then that matters. That's influence. It changes how they view other people. It changes how they view themselves, right? This is nothing new. Everyone going, yeah, that happens. We know that's how this works. It's designed to work that way. In fact, families, it grows out of that. It goes to society. So it's not just an individual thing, this is me. It's this is me and you. And then us together, we actually go out and we impact the world. Society itself is built on families. The design of any society functions as a conglomerate of family units. So goes the family, so goes the nation. And we could preach on that. In fact, if I was going to, which I'm not because I don't have time, but if I was going to preach on that, I would talk to you about how politics, what should drive our view of politics, is really how people view the family. Because civil government, as a design, should be to protect the family. That's the sustainable move. And so if we look to God to define what the family is, and then we look to any political figure who can say, I do this or I do that, well, great. Does it align with this? Because that's really what's going to be sustainable long term. But I'm not going to talk about that because that's not what we're here to talk about. What I'm going to talk about is how society is impacted from the family and the family is impacted from you. Let me show you this. In verses 1 and 2, he says, these are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you to observe in the land that you are crossing, the Jordan to possess, so that your children and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, and so that you may enjoy long life. That's the society part. That's the role of government, is to protect the enjoyment of the long life, to make sure that this is sustainable, what we're all doing together. And so in order to get to this national point, which is where God's concerned, I want you nationally to be doing this role. He doesn't start nationally. He says in order to get there, you actually have to have this family work. And in order to have this family work, it has to be real for you. It has to be real for you. You have to be personally changed in order to lead your family in this way. This is something that, we're going to hit this a couple times, but he gives these rules, and he says, I have these laws, and I have these commands, I have these structures, these sort of things to follow, You're like, oh, great, bunch of rules. Why would God give this? So that you and your children's children fear the Lord. That's maybe not where you went with it. That really the laws, the ways of God are designed to be, when we walk in them, it organizes our life in a way that we go, God is good, following him is good, and other is not good. If you grew up in a household of faith, and you had people around you that had strong faith, you had this experience, where maybe it was your mom or your grandma or your dad, or the rules of the house, where they said, this is the right way to do things. And in experiencing that, you had to come to terms with like, okay, if that's right, I've experienced some good things that come out of this. I'm going to reject that, or I'm going to accept it. Right? That's sort of the teenage rebellion years, is trying to figure out, is what mom and dad say actually true? Is it actually good for me? Is that real? And what he's saying is, when we walk this way, my heart as a dad, as a husband, as a family leader, my heart is to love the Lord. And when I love the Lord, and that changes me, I live in his ways, and that overflows to how I influence others. And I say, hey, because you're in my house, because you're under my charge, because I have influence over you, you're also going to live this way, and you're going to experience the goodness, even if you don't believe it yet. Mom and dad always making me do this, baby. Yeah, that's how it works. We all do that. It's important so that they fear the Lord. Now, I can't make them fear the Lord. I mean, sometimes you want to, you know, put the fear of God in the child, you know, but you can't really do it. But what you can do is you can show that I fear the Lord. I love Yahweh. And that changes how I live. And this is the best way to live. I love you, so I want you to live this way with me. And that's what influences the family, and therefore the family lives that way. It influences society. We've talked through the four relationship convictions. This has been a part of this series the whole time. And these are the convictions that you and I both have to hold if we're going to have a healthy relationship. And it's that I'm worth knowing, right? That you're worth knowing, the other person is worth knowing, that I accept the risk involved in trusting you, and I accept the work that's going to come out of you being broken and me being broken and us having a broken but working relationship together. It's just how relationships work. Now, what happens in a family if we transgress these convictions? Just really briefly, I'll work through this. If, as a parent especially, but as a family leader, if I don't really believe that I'm worth knowing, what will happen is even as I love other people and I'm kind to them and I'm self-giving to them, I don't think I'm worth knowing, so I'm going to block you from knowing me. What ends up happening is it's a one-way. I may love you and I may love you well, but over time, that one-way gets to the point where the other person doesn't know you. And if I don't know you, I'm not actually sure I can trust you. And relationship can't really be built. So this is something, especially early on, you don't notice this. It's later in years as the kids grow up or as the marriage matures and the people go, I can't talk to you. I don't know. I don't want to share with you. I don't know you. The second one, that they are worth knowing. This is something that it normally is never said. It's normally never verbalized. But in a family, if you're to look at the kids, you look at the other and say, yeah, I just don't think you're worth knowing. What normally ends up happening is you convey that with action. And it comes across not that they're completely worthless. It says, I love you, but just not more than I love myself. Right? I love you. I want to know you, but only as much as it's convenient for me. Right? I would rather be buzzed than be present. Right? I would rather have fun than be a provider. I would rather just get my goals accomplished than have hard, meaningful conversations. And over time, what's communicated is, I love you. I do love you. I show up at the times I show up. I do love you, but just not as much as I love myself. And then that's internalized most often. I accept the risk. Having a family, building a family, is one of the riskiest things I think that we can do. Because you're taking this other thing that's outside of you and you're pouring so much of yourself into it. And it's going to leave you. Right? There's a lot of risk. And if you don't know how to take that risk because you haven't learned or there's things like that, people avoid it. And over time, it'll come to the point where that person has the chance to risk it back, right? To develop more of what grows out of the child-parent relationship into like a friendship, mentorship. There's a chance where that will, and they'll be like, it's just not worth it. Like the risk, you were never there. You never risked it for me. Like I don't know why I would. I accept the work. I thought a lot of different ways to try to think through this. I think the best way I can say it is that lazy parents let kids shape themselves. When we don't accept the work, when we look at who's in building a family, if I don't do the hard work, what will happen is that kid will shape themselves. And some parents arrive at the conclusion that, you know what, that's fine because that kid's pretty good on their own, whatever, but that's not what they need. Last year, planted a garden, and I bought a bunch of tomatoes, tomato plants, and I bought a bunch of, I was trying to buy the bush kind, and I bought the vine kind. The vine shape should have given it away, but it didn't. So, also the label on it probably was clear. So I planted all these, and I didn't really notice what was going on. But what happens with a vine is if you just leave it as a bush, it doesn't go well. It gets tangled, it shoots off to the one side, it's on top of itself so it doesn't grow out well. It needs to be shaped. It needs structure. It needs work. And what happened was, because I was expecting it to do it itself, and it didn't, it grabbed a hold of things it shouldn't, it rooted down in places that were bad for it, and it didn't go well. Lazy parents let kids shape themselves. It's a problem. You have to accept the work. You have to accept the work in any family. And that extends past parenting, even into grandparenting, and into how you're going to interact with your nephews, how you're going to interact as a community member. It matters. So we're holding these four convictions, and we're holding them, and these are necessary. That's how we're going to build a strong relationship. We just know this is how relationship works. So I want to go from here into the answer to the question, okay, how do I build it then? If I have to have these are true and I internally these are real and I see God's hand in that, how do I actually do this? And so there's four up there. I got another four for you. That's right, an 8-point sermon. Take hold of it, everybody. Here's the thing, designing your family. Here's these four sort of action steps that you can make it personal first. Make the goal clear, make a plan, and then don't make excuses. These are the four steps that you make it personal first, you make the goal clear, you make a plan, and you don't make excuses. And as we follow through, and they go in order, as we follow through these, I want to explain a little bit, right? So this first one, make it personal first. We already touched on this briefly, but in verses 4-6, he says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts." Now, this is interesting because he's talking about how to run the family. He's talking about how I want you to get in there and I want you to build this. And the first thing he says is you, your heart, the singular, your heart, your soul, your strength, your life. You need to make it personal first. If you're trying to build a family life, you don't get to say, well, things are kind of rough, so I'm going to haul my kid and make him go to youth group. Right? We don't pay Ryan that much. We don't get, well, she's been really bad. I'm going to make her go to Sunday school. There's this trouble. I got a call from the school. Well, we better get to church. It's not this like relief valve. It doesn't work that way. This has to be, because what's going to happen? You are the primary influence, right? The family. And so if you're the primary influence and they see you living according to your convictions and they see you living according to what you think is important, they see you loving other things, and then you bring them in for this sliver of a second, the Lord is good. The Lord is good and he is faithful and he may use that to change their life. But realistically, the influence, as we talk about influence, this is very minute. So to just say, well, that'll do, is wrong. They're going to come back and they're going to see you living according to your way, and they're going to say, this is what I'm supposed to love. This is how I'm supposed to live. This is what's important to us. This is our God. Make it personal first. And as you know the one true God, you can show them. Not just tell them, show them. It'll overflow. It'll show you who to love. Listen, if your family's in trouble, if your kid's struggling, if the best thing you can do is get right with God. The best thing you can do for your family is to get close to Christ. That's the first step. You make it personal first. Secondly, you want to make the goal clear. As we see in here, we talk a lot about disciple making. We talk a lot about it. That disciple making, as a parent, if you think of your role as a disciple maker, it actually clarifies a lot of what you think you should do. We have all these like functional questions. Somebody the other day was asking me about how to save for college and if I was doing this, you know, for my kids or whatever. I'm like, college, it's college. How do you do, I'm just kidding. A few people got offended at that. I was just joking. Waste your money however you want. Now, this is why I shouldn't go off script. All right, that's not true. How do you save for college? How do you discipline? This kid needs this. This kid needs that. They have this great opportunity. Should I do it? If you understand your primary responsibility as disciple maker, that I am trying to send out disciple makers, it helps clarify. Because then I can say, does this thing help my kid get that way? Some of our kids have fantastic opportunities they shouldn't take because they have personal issues we got to deal with first. Some of our kids need more of this and less of that. I don't know your kid. Well, I probably do. But I don't know how to parent your kid. You do. You have to sit down and make the decisions. But if you have a clear goal, it's going to force your hand. Look, a lot of people don't get this. The family, especially as it comes to kids, is designed to incubate, it's designed to nurture, it's designed to discipline them so they can leave. Amen. There's a grandpa. So they can leave. That's the point. It's designed that way. Now, you may think that actively, you may just think it passively. You may not have considered that point. You're trying to get them to leave, because here's the deal, they will leave, and maybe you delay it, maybe you do this, whatever. I'm not saying they have to be out at 18. I'm not giving you any garbage that way. I'm saying you have a limited amount of time to make sure that they can actually go. Will they be ready? As a grandparent, how can you make your grandkids more ready? What are you going to give up to make sure that they can do that? As a parent, as an aunt or an uncle, as a church family member, we look at these kids and we go, we need them to be ready. How are we going to make sure they get that? We have that. It's just a limited time. And when we live that way, with this thought of a limited time frame, you understand that it also clarifies what the grandparents should be doing. It clarifies that like next level, all the aunts, uncle, all that other. Because now, look, you start out with kids and they desperately need you and they don't really want you, right? Right, like that's sort of the relationship there for a while. And over time, what you want, a healthy transition is to go this way. Not that they don't want you in your life, not that they don't, but they do want you. That your kids are like, I really want to have you around. I really want to help you. I want you to help me influence my kids. I want that, but I don't need it. I'm not dependent on you. Right? And this is a hard thing to get to. And it's delicate. I'm not going to say I have it all figured out, right? Like, I've only been a grandparent for like 6-7 years. I haven't worked out all the kinks. But if you're aiming at this, it clarifies what you're going to be trying to do back here. Does that make sense? You have to make the goal clear. I don't want this kid to need me forever. Because, just as a quick reminder, like parents and grandparents and great-grandparents have a nasty habit of dying. And if you've raised a whole family that's only dependent on you, it's a problem. You're not setting them up for success. You're not sending out disciple makers. You're keeping your own little disciples. That's not what it's designed for. Another part of this, when you make the goal clear, it forces you to keep growing up, right? If you have kids young, we did, I don't know, how old were we? Like teenagers, I don't know how old we were. I was a teenager, okay, we were young, whatever. Kids having kids. And so what happens is that kid forces you to grow up real fast. And then as you go, the more you learn, they start asking you questions. And you can't just be like, I don't know, that's what my, I don't know, you know. You have to be able to tell them, well, we don't do it for this reason. And if you want to continue to grow, like you have to grow as a dad. You have to grow as a mom. You have to grow as a grandparent. They need you to be more next year than you were this year. They need you to grow because they're growing. And that's, it forces that. And that's one of the reasons it's the hardest relationship is because there's so much sanctification that happens in that relationship. There's so much where you're like, you butt up against it. And you're like, I'm not qualified for this. I don't know how to answer that question. I don't want to answer that question. I don't know what to do here. And it forces you to grow. You need that. Make the goal clear. Make the goal clear. So, all right, so we have make it personal first. We have make the goal clear. The next one that we move into is make a plan. Deuteronomy 7, verse 7 and 9, he says, impress them on your children. Talking about the commands, the ways of God. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. Here's the reality of this part. Talk about making a plan. Lives are built. This is an important concept. Lives are built. You build your life. You build it by the things you do. You build it by the time in which they get done. You do it. You build by the way you go about it. You are building your life, right? And this is an unfortunate truth. If you don't intentionally build your life, circumstances will build your life for you. You ever know somebody who like lives perpetually as a victim of circumstance, right? Slave to the calendar, slave to the latest crisis, slave to the, it's, what's happening? Their life is built by those things. It's deciding how their life is going to go. It's deciding what's important to them. It's deciding their longer term. You can't do that. Here, in this passage, it's interesting. They took these very literally, these commands, right? So the Jewish people, they would, the Israelites get out, they'd get these little strips of paper, and they would write out the Ten Commandments, and they'd roll it into a little scroll, and they'd put it in this tiny little box, and they would tie it to their forehead. You might even see that, right? The little pictures, they have these weird, like things. They're putting it on their forehead. And they would have scripture, and they would sew it into the seams on their, because then it's on their hands. And they would inscribe it on their doorposts, and they would inscribe. And at one sense, you can be like, oh, this is dumb. Yeah, but it's like, I've seen some of y'all's coffee mugs, some of y'all's shirts that you wear, and like the bumper sticker, and like God, up point, down point, greater than, you know, like you guys have all the different things. What is that? We're putting these things around us. We want those things to influence us. And the meaning here is a little bit deeper. It's not just that God wants something strapped to your forehead. That's not the point. The point is that your mind would be his mind. That the things you do, you live, you act in the way that lines with what he's doing. That the places you go, that the way your life is built on him. Right? The life needs to be designed around God. And in order to get there, you have to make a plan. God gave his people calendar. It's kind of a weird thing. Like if you think of yourself as like this sovereign ruler, you're like, the first thing, May 24th, this is what I want you to do. Like it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me until you start looking at how it works. I want you to celebrate these holidays on this day. I want you to wear these certain type of clothes. When you go this way, I want you to walk past this big thing. I want you to build this thing. Like, why? God is putting functional devices in their life that cause them to remember Him. Do this Passover. I want you to do this meal this certain way. And then when it happens, you know what's going to happen? You're going to have that one kid. You know the one. The one that's always asking questions. And that kid is going to say, why are we doing this? He says, when they ask, tell them, because the Lord your God rescued us. Because the Lord your God was faithful. Because the Lord your God showed up. Because the Lord your God is good. Build this thing, and when you walk by it, your children will ask. When you have these events, they will ask. It's designed so that when you do these things, the fabric of the life impresses upon the children, this is the right way to live. And you're providing every opportunity that the fear of the Lord, that faith, that recognition of Yahweh as the true God will blossom in them. Making a plan. Now, realistically, some of those things might not play out, you know, the wood boxes on your kid's head, they'll probably knock them off, or play rhino or whatever. Like, they probably won't work. So what do you do? How do you make this plan? Here's a step. And I know what you're thinking. 4 plus 4 plus, that's 12 points. That's a 12-point sermon. If that was a whitetail, you'd put it on your wall. All right, so when you look at these categories, as you go to sit down and build your life, I want you to do this. And it's not just if you have kids. This applies to grandparents. This applies to single people. This applies to everybody. You're building your life. And I want you to think through these categories. Look, realistically, you already do this. You 100% do this. Well, every once a year we take our family vacation. Well, we always make sure we go to grandma's for that meal, right? Well, we always have these things that we do every year because to celebrate that thing, right? You have annual repeated systems in your life. Well, we never plan around this time because dad's super busy in the field and we want to make sure that, right? This is a seasonal thing. Every day we eat together at this time, right? You build your life this, you already do it. What I'm asking you to do is sit down, take the time to make sure there's big portions of your life that aren't slipping away. Take the time to sit down and say, let's organize our life so that God's designed into it. Not the add-on, not the maybe, not the relief valve. No. That we impress upon everyone in our life, this is important to us. And so what does that look like? Annually, it's like, well, hey, Christmas Eve service. Is that a thing you do? Maybe it should be. Talk about it. Right? Here's a fun one. We do in-gathering here, which is in November. It's a time where we give sacrificially. We're extra generous. And that goes to different things. It goes missions, goes all this stuff. But the design of that is annually, we all have a time where we say, hey, guys, do you remember how God was faithful to us all year? Do you remember how God was generous to us all year? And when my kids come to me and say, why do we do in-gathering? I can say, because God has been generous to us. He's been kind to us. And we want to be generous to Him. We want to be thankful to Him, right? So it's built into there. Seasonal, what does that look like? You say, well, we have ball schedule this time. Great. What are you going to do in that? Well, Wednesday night season is this. Great. If that fits your family, get involved. Well, I have this thing that starts and ends. Great. Build it in there and be intentional. This is why this is here. Not just another chore. I'm building my life. Daily you have these things. Here's a couple questions. When will you read together? You can do it. Most of us in this room can read. You can do it. When are you going to pray together? When are you planning on memorizing a verse together? There's different ways to do it. Right? And I'll be honest. Like, we've tried it several different ways, and it's like, hey, we're going to do this family prayer time. It ends up with somebody crying, and it's a bad deal. It's like, this didn't work. You know, you can't, like, punish kids for not praying the right way. Whatever. It gets complicated. Figure it out. Sit down. Design it. You can do that. Last thing, really quick, off of my 12th point, is There's reminders. And this is the clothes you wear. These are the pictures in your house. These are the, think about it. When you put up a picture, what are you doing? I want to remember that. I want that to influence me. And for some of us, we're just decorating whatever. That's fine. Be aware. That's how your kid knows home. That's what they'll picture for the rest of the life. I can picture my kitchen from when I was 5. The nasty yellow cabinets, I see it all. I have it. That influenced me. I'm not saying everything has to be built out of, you know, hide crosses around your house or something. I'm saying be intentional. Build your life a certain way because you can. And if I was going to take this one step further, I would talk about, hey, there's actually some things about the music that's playing in the background that matters, or the movies that we're watching. Not as this legalistic, well, I don't like that they said. No, that's not what I'm saying. Does that help you send out disciple makers? Then replace it with something that does. Because if it doesn't, it's going to be a problem down the road. Remember, reminders. Make a plan so that your children have it impressed on them. This is right. This is what we do here. This is who we are. This is the way my life works. Be intentional about that. And my second final point on this point. Make the church a fixture. I'm not saying go to every church event. I'm not saying you have to be legalist about your attendance. What I'm saying is the church is designed in a similar way that it, as a scheduling point, it will change you. We have one of the biggest joys in the Westmark church family is that we see people come to Christ. And following up with them is amazing. And especially the beginning stages there, they're just growing. And I have this conversation kind of repeatedly where somebody will give their life to the Lord, and then a couple weeks later they show up and they're like, hey, it's crazy, my life has changed. And they'll tell you about, yeah, this sin is different, or I'm growing here, or I'm reconciling, and God is good. But here's a super fascinating one. They'll talk about how their entire schedule has shifted. Right? I used to be about Friday nights. Now the center point of my week is Sunday morning. Right? It goes from focusing on Friday night and getting through Monday morning. Like those are the two hot ones. That's not what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna celebrate Sunday morning and I'm looking forward to Wednesday night. And that shift of life, that shift of calendar, it really changes how people live. Changes their sleeping schedule. It changes what they're looking. Changes what they commit to being involved with. Now, I'm not saying you have to commit to Wednesday nights. I'm not saying you have. That's not my point. My point is when you're committed to something, it shapes how you live. And if you make church as like a fixture, that will impact your life. And it'll communicate things to your family. As a family, this is important to us. This is something we do. It matters. And some of the things that come off of that are like, you know, you don't want to fall into legalism. You end up needing it. Some of us who have this really like ingrained habit of going to church and it's what we do, it's a part of our intake. And when you miss that, it's like, I feel weird. If you miss it a little bit more than that, it's like, I feel not good. I've come to rely on a life source that's from here, that the Lord works through his people. That's a good thing. The goal would be that your kids Saturday would not ask you, are we going to church tomorrow? Now, you're always going to have the one inquisitive kid, right? I got one of those. Are we going to church? It's like, we go every, yes. I work there. They're going to notice. And they're going to come get us. We're across. They're good. Yes. You're going to have that. But as a system, as an understanding, as a culture, this is what we do. This is important to us. And you can do that. You can do that. Look, this discussion is so scary. It's so awful. Because we work through this, and it's like, I see so much I've already messed up. I see it. I see opportunities I've missed, things I did that I shouldn't have done, things that I didn't do that I should have done. But look, there's grace. In fact, one of the graces that God gives to parents who are failing, which is like, is the church. Now, hear me on this. You came into your family not full, not complete, not perfect. So did your spouse. And then together you're trying to learn this and you're trying to build this family, and it's not going to be complete. Like, things are going to drop off. There's things that you missed. There's things like the family of God. Look, we didn't make that up. Right? That's from the Bible. The children of God. God is our Father. Like, that's a real thing. And together, when we come together, in a very, very literal way, some of those missing pieces can show up. Right? So the brothers, or the sisters, or the mom, or the dad, or the grandparents, or the children. The ones that you feel like are missing, God can bring through the church family. The church, it's amazing. And some of us have experienced this fully, where we came along and we're like, yeah, and so, they became a dad to me, teaching me the things that I didn't know. Yeah, so-and-so became a mom to me and showed me this love that I'd really never experienced. Yeah, so-and-so was a brother in a time of need. So-and-so was a sister, and I didn't have anybody else and I could lean on her. You see it all the time. You see it here. People come in and this little kid runs up to somebody else. They take Lonnie's candy. Right? They beat Bruce's horn on his wheelchair. What are they doing? This is life. This is family. And they're able to pour in, they're able to get poured into from somewhere that they couldn't have. When I first moved here, I preached maybe a month or two after I'd been here. And I went out there and I was standing out there and I was talking to somebody, and this senior saint came up to me, and she looks at me just dead in the eye. She says, "I'm your grandma now." I'll take it. And she has been. And it's been incredible. It's been a massive blessing to me, to my family, because I've never really had a grandma. And here's the deal. It's hard to be a grandma for yourself. It gets weird. But the side of growth that came out of that, I never would have known that I didn't know. We need each other. And here's the deal. I bet you're the missing piece for somebody else. Make a plan. Finally, my 12th point. Don't make excuses. We get personal first, make the goal clear, make a plan, and then we don't make excuses, because this is what happens, that we have made plans and they haven't gone so great. Amen? And we've tried and it didn't really work. And then I was set up wrong, and the way my parents did it and the way my grandparents did it, and I didn't have this and I never had that. And we make excuses as if that's enough reason to stop going forward. And it's not true. It's not true. Listen, what happened may explain how you got here, but it does not need to excuse why you stay here. I'm going to say that again. Okay? What's happened in the past, it may explain how you are where you are and why things hurt and why things are hard. It may explain it. It doesn't have to excuse staying there. There's growth. There's growth. In fact, instead of making excuses, what we need to do is seek forgiveness and healing and growth. Maybe you're sitting here and like, this whole thing is hard because you're thinking back to how you raised your kids or how this happened or how that, and you're like, I just wish I could change and I wish I could do this. There's forgiveness. Like, get used to saying sorry. Get used to saying, I forgive you. Get used to saying, I don't know, but let's learn together. Get used to saying, we don't do that around here. When we have these things that are convictional and we live by them, it means we don't have to make the excuse. Instead, we can grow. You get that? You get that excuses are just a reason to not grow? You need to grow as a dad. You need to grow as a mom. You need to grow as a grandparent. You need to grow as a church member. You need to grow. Don't make excuses. Don't make excuses. Honestly, if this has been the worst series to preach, it's been awful. It's been awful to write these things, because as I'm writing and I write about what friendship should look like, I'm just constantly confronted with my own friendships that haven't looked that way, right? And I'm writing about how marriage should work and how it should be perfectly designed to go this way, and I'm looking at where it has not been that way. And I'm preaching about family and how God's designed his family to do this thing and grow and be this thing, and I'm going, nah, I've missed that. But the good news is that there's forgiveness and there's healing and there's growth. That when we come to Yahweh, come to the one true God, and we receive forgiveness because of what his son did for us, and he gives us the Spirit of God to work in us, to change our hearts, to change how we live, to gives us the ability to be the kind of parents we need to be, to build the kind of family we need to, then those mistakes and those pasts, those scars, they don't have to be what defines your family moving forward. Joel 2, he talks about, says where God will restore the locust-eaten years. And the locusts were sent because Israel was disobeying. So there's this sin, and because of the sin, it steals all this from them. And God says, I can restore that. And I wonder if as many years are torn away from you as have been, as many mistakes as you have, if God is big enough to restore those years to you. Oh, I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have done this. I wish I would. Do it now. There's people around you now. There's people around you now that need you. They need you to be this person. They need you to have that heart that made it personal and is transformed. Here's the other deal. This might sound aggressive. It's not meant that way. If you feel a deep regret because you've messed things up with your kids, because things have passed that you... share the gospel with them. See, you can't make up for lost time now, but when Jesus returns and he makes the world new and we're together and creation's working the way it's supposed to, we can make up for lost time then. There's hope. There's forgiveness. We need to build our families this way. 13thly, if you fail to build your family's life around the thing it's designed to be built around, namely God, do not expect to experience success. I want to make it personal first. I want you to make the goal clear. I want you to make a plan, and I don't want you to make excuses, because then we can build a family around God and enjoy it the way it's designed to be enjoyed, wherever you are in life.